This is the Media Freak Podcast. It's the latest and greatest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs. We're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft.
Buenos dias.
Buki from Wavemaker.
Hola.
And we are delighted to have a very special guest appearance this week. We're pleased to announce that Dan Sutton, UK Sales Director at BeatGrid, has joined the Freaks this week.
Woo! Bonjour.
Hey, Dan, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I mean, everyone else teed up with like a non-English version saying hello, so I had to think on my feet, and the quickest I came to was bonjour.
Very well. We're still a bilingual team here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Some may know him best as the man who delivers better cross-channel measurement solutions. Others may know him as Dan the Man with his measurement van.
Oof, that's not being coined, but I'll see if anyone sticks after the podcast.
That can be a LinkedIn bio.
You should definitely, that's something you've got to pitch to BeatGrid now. You need a measurement van.
We need a BeatGrid measurement van. I mean, our colours are pretty garish. We could have it balling around London across the media agencies in their like bright yellow and black like vinyls. We'll see.
Let's go.
Get some speakers in it. Nice big sub.
Well, you heard it here first, gang. And before we get into it, how was Madfest, Buki? Did you have fun?
Yes, it was actually. It was really fun. I linked up with Dan. Linked up with Dan quite a bit, actually. We hung out a little bit. I actually saw old Charlie. Charlie number one. And then as far as talks go, I will link one of the posts that I put out on LinkedIn last week, just kind of detailing the best and the greatest. I think I went to some of the things that Jack said, but it was a lot of them were oversubscribed. I couldn't get in.
Well, that's because everyone took my recommendations and they were like, we've got to go to that. I don't know.
It was really good, actually. I think there's some really interesting themes. It's so interesting to see how the industry is shifting. We've gone from this, oh, we need to do loads, we need to be so attention, we need to be bold, and now everyone's like, let's lean into being boring, let's be chill.
Really? Blimey,
very good.
Well, that's something we're not going to do.
Yeah, and this episode certainly isn't chill. Today we discuss increasing tech giant profit margins, a boo hiss, YouTube's fight against the robots, and we discuss the latest annual report from Nielsen, where we'll hear a little bit more from Dan about that. So let's get into it. In tech giant news, as reported in the trade press, Meta is riding high. Revenue hit $42 billion in Q1 of this year, a 16% increase from last year. So Meta's CEO, Mark Zucky, our famous man, previously known as...
Before we go into the rest of this, what is Meta doing? Is it riding high?
Is that
like a cow? Is that a cowboy reference?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, nice,
isn't it? Shall I do that bit again, or are we?
No, I love it. I think that stays in. And believe Keep me, I'm in. Editing this week, so that stays in.
Okay. Well. Anyway, Meta CEO Mark Zucky has pointed the success to rapid advances in AI, referencing innovations like Meta AI and the AI-powered glasses. And yes, I'm sure we all believe that it's the glasses that are making the billions.
We're all wearing them, aren't we? So you can't see it because it's a podcast,
but
here we are.
But margins are up too, apparently. So Meta's operating margin has increased since last year, basically meaning that their core business is becoming even more profitable. But what do you think about this, guys? I mean, is this good news, bad news?
It's just news, if I'm honest. I don't think it's here nor there. It's interesting that he's trying to say that the increase in revenue is because of these new technologies. I think the AI glasses and everything, all that kind of stuff, is about 1% to 2% of Meta's revenue, with the other 98% coming from advertising. So I think the AI might be helping to improve their margins, cutting their costs, letting them lay off more people.
Yeah, that's definitely
what it is. That's literally where it's coming from, because they're not made. I think that when I looked, did a little bit of research, I think they're actually still making a loss on all of those technologies that he's citing as the reasons that their revenues are going up. So, eek, I don't see us getting off the Meta teat anytime soon.
The Meta, the Meta titties. I mean, it is a bit like, I don't know, I think, and this is based pretty much purely on conjecture, whereas Bookie seems to have actually done some research. The majority, like the groundswell of Meta's sort of advertising revenue comes from people who use it as self-serve. So, because they made it really accessible for small businesses to set up and use themselves. They've also then gone and made these ridiculous deals with agencies, which are just sort of siphoning money out of absolutely everyone. But really, as long as they're still providing that very kind of easy to use and, you know, effective in the early stages advertising product, they're always going to see those developments, unless there's like a massive crash or something and people really start pulling out of it. But I don't know.
Question for you guys who are planning media. Can you plan without Meta? Yes. Like, if you sent a plan without Meta, would you have clients who are like, where is Meta on this? Or are people open to it not being there?
I routinely send plans without Meta. It performs a role, and like for the right role, it can do a job. But I think when it's just like putting Meta on for the sake of it, you know, you can be more creative than that, I think.
Yeah, and I think to be an indie, because that sounds gorgeous. That sounds like the life I'd love to live. But we often will see that, I think, especially in the bigger organizations where you're planning for like really huge corporations, and they have an expectation of certain, whether it is CPMs or certain outcomes or CPLs, any of those things, oftentimes you can't meet those without having like Meta on plan. So you almost put them in just to offset some of the other things that you might want on plan that might be a little bit more expensive, or that might not necessarily bring the immediate performance that you're willing to see. So I think, yeah, if that's the other side of the coin, sometimes you have to put them on, otherwise you can't put anything fun on or anything good on or anything actually useful on.
But my second question is, obviously, Meta is getting heat through regulatory scrutiny, which is a topic we've covered plenty on the pod in previous episodes. Do you think we're finally heading for disruption, or will Meta just keep growing?
I think that they're probably going to fall foul of regulation in some markets in some respects. But like until someone goes, do you know what? Enough's enough. And they get enough clout from EU lawyers behind them or something like that, they will continue to grow because they've kind of had that critical mass. And yeah, I think they basically just need to cross their fingers that they're not going to get tripped up by the government, man.
Yeah, I think I honestly really agree with that, because for everything that we say about Meta, I think they are still a fantastic aggregator of audiences. Let's just be honest. The audiences are there. And so until they stop being there, advertisers will continue to also be there, and they will continue to, whether it's acquire different organizations and companies to make sure their audience doesn't slip over time. So yeah, I think they'll keep growing.
Very good. Very good. Well, in other tech giant news, so YouTube, owned by Google, is cracking down on AI generated content as of this week. So YouTube is overhauling its monetization rules, meaning they're cracking down on low effort, mass produced AI generated content. Now, what that basically means is that any channels that rely heavily on third-party content with minimal editing may lose the monetization of their videos. And YouTube has done this to really reflect their vision to elevate authentic content and showcase originality from content creators as the new currency. So what kind of effect do you think this is going to have on inventories and perhaps CPMs for brand and advertisers, Jack?
I actually don't think it's going to have too much of an effect on inventory or CPMs, because the inventory is going to be informed by the audiences that are actually, you know, on the YouTube platform. The AI slop that is getting generated and sort of starting to fill in all the cracks between the good content isn't pulling new people towards the platform. So it's not like they're going to see like a deflation in their usership, in their user base, because they've got you know, because they're taking this terribly low quality content out. If anything, it will actually do more for the platform because it will make it, you know, full of much higher quality content.
Do you not think that potentially, though, because I get what you're saying in terms of like it doesn't bring in new users,
yeah,
but in terms of the amount of content on the platform, which obviously allows for more ad space and whatever, that should come down if they're going to start bringing that. So we could see a slight inflation in CPMs, but there's nothing really to back that up apart from just my mind.
Maybe, but like, because it's growing so exponentially anyway, I just can't see it having that much of an effect on the overall numbers. I think it's brilliant what they're doing, because I get hit with so many videos, like, because I'm, you know, in this world of podcasting and content creation or whatever, it's like, you know, find ways to farm content so that you can just have like passive income, and you're just like, it's real low quality, low rent AI generated scripts and voice text to speech translation stuff. It's really low quality, and I think anyone with half a brain can see through it. So I think
the interesting thing for me with YouTube is when I have a look at what they're doing now, what they're announcing now, versus all the news that came out around the time of Cannes, where it was like basically announced that they had been allowing AI corporations and companies to essentially use YouTube videos and scrape subtitles from YouTube videos in order to train their AI models. So OpenAI, Nvidia, Meta, Amazon were all kind of benefiting from that. And they've had to kind of come around because they, in their original kind of like standard practices, they don't allow people to do that. And so they've now had to change the way that their creator studio is so that the creators can opt in or out of that. But they have not said whether or not they had let people opt in and out of that before. So for me, there is a juxtaposition between what they were doing and the way they're appeasing big tech, and then also the way they're communicating with creators. So there's two sets of things going on here. And I love this. I love this, and I love what they're now doing now that they've been found out to be doing all that nonsense and letting people scrape and, you know, feed their AI models. But it's still giving big tech to me.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I like that, Bix.
Sound clever today, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
It's like someone's had their weight of Bix. Jeez.
Yeah. I think it times quite nicely with a press release from the start of the month where they were talking about putting a value on rewarding people who are producing original content. So came out a couple of weeks back now. It basically feeds into what they're calling their creator consultation. So they're offering essentially like a policy proposal they're taking to government so that content creators can be recognized as a profession, and they'll help out with trying to put like a formal minister in the industry, giving representation at councils for creative sectors and more access to like finance and infrastructure for like upskilling creatives, I guess. So like to your point, Buki, this looks good. Whether it screams big tech or not, it looks like they really are trying to actually like entice and upskill people who are at the core of what the platform offering should be, being like original and authentic content.
I actually like it. It seems like they're doing a good job top and bottom. So
very good. Well, moving on in network agency news. Now, if you're a regular listener of the Media Freak podcast, you would have heard us provide a thorough breakdown of WPP's journey over the last year, episode 13, if you are yet to hear it. Now, as we know, there have been some highs and lows at WPP, and we talked about Mark Read stepping down as CEO in June after 30 years in the company. And now this month, news has landed that ex-COO of Microsoft, Cindy Rose, OBE, American-British businesswoman, is taking the reins. So Cindy is the first female CEO in WPP's history.
Let's go. We like that.
Yeah, we do like that. She'll start the new gig on the 1st of September. But I think it's fair to say she's got a bit of a mess to sort out. So WPP's share price is at a 16-year low, obviously as a result of a lot of the stuff we talked about in episode 13, you know, client losses, sluggish growth. So with Cindy's tech-centric background, should I say, is she the right woman to help it get on to success, I suppose? What do you think, Books?
I reckon... Yes, I think so. I think what we'll see is a dramatic change in what the business is and what the business does. If we can take her appointment as any kind of indication, it's giving, you know, at some point we could even see ourselves just be an entire self-serve platform at some point, which is a crazy thing to say. I know, but there's, I think, all the different holding companies are fighting in different spaces and they're trying to carve out different areas. I think there's a possibility that us leaning into, you know, a CEO with a tech background could see us becoming partners with our clients, but in a very different way. Those clients who are moving much more towards in-housing might work with us because they don't need so many of us to do it. Mm. And she would definitely be the right person to lead us down that road. So, yeah, that's just, I literally just thought that on the spot.
Can I make a prediction for what's going to happen? So obviously, like, really tech focused, she's going to be really forward thinking. So I think a really good bet for who she might hire as chief client officer moving forward with the new regime would be Clippy from Microsoft Word. Because obviously really helpful. Can't
Why
do enough.
You have me on the edge of my seat.
I know. I was like, what is this hot take going to be?
Hey, I mean, hey, if we're gonna, if WPP goes full self serve, get Clippy in.
Wow. Yeah, Bookie, you know what? I did actually think, and I even had written down, so you stole my point, but like, are WPP just becoming an automated extension of in-housing? Like, is there going to be a point where client A goes, this is the budget, this is what I want to do, bang, WPP auto generates a plan, bam, sends it to Meta AI, nobody's involved there, they come back with their Meta plan, no humans involved, we're just talking AI driven efficiency machines from like start to finish.
I'm pretty sure you might have seen a leaked document.
That is a really, really dystopian and bleak vision of the future. I really hope it doesn't get to that.
I've been on calls that have felt like Black Mirror, so that really doesn't feel that far away.
That will not. Do you know what though? They're welcome to it, because that means that people who do place value on planning and strategy will be able to execute an enormous competitive advantage, because the black box cookie cutter plan approach that has, like, you know, the six different types of plans that WPP might recommend, and it's all been econometrically optimized and whizzed in and out, and no one's kind of given it, you know, much human thought, will probably leave a lot of space for the competitions and challenger brands. So I welcome that.
Yeah, I think everything's got a time and a place, and I think there will be clients and people who want that. But you're right, Jack, I think there's a huge opportunity for everyone else in other spaces now.
Well, she'll be ready to hit the ground running, because she's been on WPP's board since 2019. So
she's
Clippy. So there we go. We look forward to his LinkedIn post about it. Moving on. In the MarTech landscape, we'd like to talk to you about Alchemy Network. Now, Alchemy is an innovation consultancy that's changing the game when it comes to marketing and ad tech. Alchemy works with over 550 global brands and agencies, distilling the overwhelming world of tech into tailored time-saving sessions that just cut through the noise. They're a brilliant partner, whether you've got a brief to crack or if you just want to stay sharp on what's next in our industry. Bookie, Jack, have you worked with Alchemy before?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's good about Alchemy, right, is that in the world where there's like 10,000 new AI tools seemingly every 10 minutes and every tech partner you speak to has a different one, they're very good at kind of cutting out all the ones that aren't really relevant for you and putting forward some that actually might be. You know, it could be an AI measurement solution. It could be something that's kind of more end-to-end management, if that's your thing.
If you're curious and would like to learn more, reach out to hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out. In other media news, so measurement and analytics company Nielsen released their seventh annual marketing report earlier this summer. The report itself uncovers how marketers are adapting to market trends and changing technologies. And there were a number of key trends highlighted, including increases in CTV ad spend, predicted out-of-home budget increases, stark regional differences in lower funnel versus upper funnel investments globally, and lastly, and more importantly, how success is measured. So recent data suggests that only 32% of global marketers have a holistic measurement framework. Now, that actually really surprised me. I thought there would be a lot more. But the challenges cited in the report made sense. One was the fact that the market's saturated with too many vendors. There's a lack of transparency. The list goes on. But Jack Buki, what challenges have you faced around measurement?
I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges that you face from an agency standpoint is a kind of a lack of ability to prioritize. I do a lot of work with a very, very large telecoms company who shall go unnamed. And they've got so much measurement in place that, and kind of every kind of variety, that it's almost like data overload. So they're kind of stuck in a bit of a data blizzard. And so that's kind of one end of the problem, is when they have too much. And then at the other end, you have much smaller advertisers who don't actually have, who see it as a kind of almost like a wasted budget, because they're going, well, Meta tells me if my campaign's been successful. But of course, if they're marking their own homework with brand lift studies and things like that, they're obviously gearing them towards, it's been well published. I can say this because it's been well publicized how they're kind of fixed in favor of the people marking their own homework. So, and yeah, tricky.
I think, like, kind of leaning off from that, is exactly that, where we've got such siloed kind of walled gardens, it then becomes very difficult to see your impact across the entire campaign. Because yes, Meta can tell me how that part of the campaign worked, because I very rarely will have a campaign that just has one channel on it or one platform on it. So Meta will tell me how Meta did, and YouTube will tell me how YouTube did, and all of those things will go, and, you know, our programmatic partners will tell us how that did, but there's no way to see the entire campaign together. So I think that's what has been one of the biggest struggles in having a holistic measurement framework. We have lots of different measurement frameworks, and then there's lots of manual work going behind the scenes with the team trying to somehow pull that data together or make it make sense in a usable way that provides insight so we can kind of optimize for next time. So that it's just a lot of Agro Santos, really.
So Dan, the man with your measurement van, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I think there's no like shying away from the fact that these platform studies can be really useful if you want to know how to optimize in channel. Like, there's no harm in that. And often it's funded anyway, a lot of the time, right? So if you want to understand how you can most effectively tailor that channel, great. But they don't take into account cross-channel synergies. And we all know the benefits of like combining media channels to greater effect, right? It's not 1 + 1 = 2, is it? So I think this is where the lack of transparency, like Jack and Buki mentioned, the siloed and just the incompatible metrics gets in the way. And it also, I hope you guys would agree, but I think that actually works in the favor of like the short term and like the digital platforms. It kind of does like your more like top of funnel brand building media a bit dirty, because they're not as easy to measure and optimize and prove the immediate success as these short term like Meta or TikTok or whatever, right? So I think getting a holistic view is really important, not just so you can kind of level the playing field a bit, but also just to make sure that you guys as planners, all the work you're putting in, you can use it as a proof point actually and say, look, what we're recommending, yes, we know it's right because we planned it and we're the experts, but also look, we've backed it with some measurement as well, and we can tell you that our recommendations are valid.
I would definitely agree with that, Dan.
Yeah,
you sound clever today too.
Thank you. I've got my big boy pants on.
I mean, this is the thing, the majority of advertising effects happen in the long term, but no one's properly measuring for the long term. Very few brands have really kind of solid econometrics in on a regular enough cadence to be able to make informed decisions about what the findings are. If you only do it twice a year, you know, ultimately what's the point? But
yeah. No one's got the money or the patience.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone wants it now, and they were actually want patience. It 5 minutes ago.
I think patience is actually, that's a big shout from you there. I think that a lot. I think we do so much in the media time. No one has the patience to stick it out. You know, back your shit when the chips are down.
Yeah, and I think that what was apparent in that report is there's a bit of a bleak outlook that over half global marketers plan to reduce their ad spend, and that almost certainly is going to come at the detriment of like brand building media, isn't it? Like, it's not going to come like, if you can prove that your short-term activations are driving sales in a conversation with the CFO, like that's done.
Yeah, basically. And to our point that started the show, do we think Meta's revenues are going to continue to grow? If they're cut in ad spend and they can go, oh, well, Meta, look, you put money in here and then you follow the thread and sales come out of here and they measure it for us, that's why people are going to fall into that trap.
There we go. Well, that wraps up the news this week. Remember, you can respond and have your say in any of the topics and stories we discuss on the podcast. Email us. It's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. Now, whilst we've wrapped up the news, we're not moving away from measurement because we want to give some airtime to Dan Sutton, the man with the measurement van. But that doesn't make sense now that I've put Sutton in the
set. It'd be Dan Sutton with a measurement button, right? I don't know.
Oh yes, that'd be good.
I feel like we're really clutching at straws. We'll nail this by the end of the pod. We'll have it by the end.
We're workshopping it. It's fine.
Yeah, I like it.
So Dan, I promise we won't challenge you too much here, but we'd love to know a little bit more about your role at BeatGrid and well, just in general, your career to date, I suppose. So how long have you been at BeatGrid?
So I've been at BeatGrid about 15 months or so. Prior to that, I did a little bit of time at Nielsen. So like kind of a more traditional media research agency, I guess. And then before that, I kind of really cut my teeth media owner side. So working at Deco, selling posters for the greater good.
Did you have to wear a suit?
Oh, mate, I came in at the time when that was kind of just edging out, but I did wear a jacket for pretty much my entire 5 years stint there. But it was, I was on the end of that. There were no ties.
Never seen you in a jacket.
They were proper old school. Like when the Deco folks came in, it was like, oh, here they are with the briefcases.
Blue shirts, ties, everything. There's still a few old heads there that rock up with that. But generally, it was definitely phasing out. I don't think you'll see any sort of the new recruits coming up in suits.
Okay, fair enough. You don't do so that BeatGrid then?
No.
Have you got BeatGrid tracksuits?
No, we do have some t-shirts, but I think they were reserved for like events. It's a really small universe in the UK, which is nice. It's great fun, but it just means that if I turn up in a suit and no one's heard of you in the first place, it's just a little bit like, it'd be a bit like, who's this guy?
Why did he arrive in a van that has measurement written inside of it? I mean,
why has he got a big button that says measurement on it? Like, what's happening? No, it's much more relaxed affair now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's fair to say, Dan, that you're a seasoned industry specialist with your background. And if you had to, I suppose, sell BeatGrid in a few sentences on this pod, what would you say? How would you say that BeatGrid has helped planners measure across channels?
I guess kind of it's almost like a summary of everything we've just said, you know, because of the walled gardens, because like TV data and BVOD is housed within the broadcasters by Barb, you've got YouTube, Meta, etc., held within walled gardens. You've got the streamers now, right? There's so many ways and opportunities for you to connect your brand with your consumers, but it's so difficult to join the dots. And like, we're seeing this with industry initiatives like Origin, the intentions are great, but it's just really hard to make it happen. And that's just because we're still reliant on like modeling together different data sets from different suppliers and providers. So what we do at BeatGrid is single source, it's person based, and we measure actual exposure. So because we're like a tech forward company, as opposed to being like a traditional research agency, we're kind of able to overcome a lot of your traditional boundaries and challenges that you see in the cross-channel measurement space and really give you a picture as to like, how is each channel performing? Where are you driving incremental reach? You know, how, Jack, I know you love frequency. which channels are driving frequency? Where are the overlaps? So it's the solution we have is probably a fresh perspective on the space. We essentially have a mobile app So we have a panel in the UK and everyone's downloaded our app. And within that, we have our ACR, so our audio content recognition. Essentially, what we do is we passively measure all of our panelists' exposure to an ad campaign through the phone's microphone. It's like Shazam, but for advertising, right? And so what this allows us to do is essentially, channel by channel, understand exactly where consumers saw your ad. And also off the back of that, did they actually manage to drive A, unique reach, and also B, from a brand lift perspective, you know, has exposure to your ad and on specific channels, has that managed to actually drive any uplift in like brand perceptions, awareness, consideration, anything like that? So
Barb should have gotten you guys long time ago.
Yeah.
That's what they should have done. They stayed in the dark ages when they should have been doing this.
Can I just say, by the way, I really like that Dan had picked up on the fact that I'm about frequency, and the reason that he had is because I've said it so many times, thus proving my point.
Frequency
is important. Frequency is important.
Frequency there we go.
Is important.
Well, thanks so much, Dan. It's been a pleasure to have you on the pod. And that wraps up this week. So thank you so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you like listening to our Freak this week, remember to like, subscribe, and tell all your friends. Huge thanks again to our guest of honour, Dan Sutton. Charlie will be back as normal next week. Hello. And big thanks to Alchemy Network, our long-term commercial partner. Email hello@alchemy-network.co.uk to find out more about them. Goodbye.